Moncrief on News Talk.
It is time for headline season. I mean, the parenting slot. Joanna Fortune joins us once again. Afternoon, Joanna.
Good afternoon, Sean.
My son is in sixth year and doesn't know what he wants to do after school. He's an intelligent kid, but was coasting last year because he lacked motivation, having nothing to work towards. And I'm fearful the same will happen again this year. He started to have meetings with the school's career guidance counsellors, but says they've been unsuccessful and that there's nothing that interests him enough to do for the rest of his life. I've tried to tell him that it doesn't have to be for that long and that people make career changes at all ages, but it's made no difference. I know there's a lot of pressure on children to make this decision at a young age, but he doesn't seem to be feeling any of it. It would be nice to find the middle ground with this. I don't want him to be left behind when the rest of his peers move on to the next stage next year.
I'm not sure there's any harm in someone being a little left behind after school. I think this kind of churning kids out of school and straight into third level, if that's the route they're taking, does add to this pressure of pick a career path. But of course you can't do it, whatever he would be, 17, 18 years old. Like, I really empathise with this kid, have to say. And that overwhelming burden of choices that he's feeling pressured to make. And I'm wondering if you could reframe this as, you know, instead of choosing a career or a job in the future, that he's choosing something he would enjoy. And try to, why don't you just pick something that, gosh, if I was going to study anything, I'd really enjoy studying that. And let him pick something that would spark joy, therefore interest, therefore engagement, and therefore motivation. But you can, you know, then focus on him saying, if he's like, I don't enjoy anything, there's nothing on those lists I enjoy, just say, okay, do you know what? Work as hard as you can to ensure that whatever you get out of these exams will cover any choice you might want to make in the future. So just get this exam done to the best of your ability and try, maybe don't pin it to make a choice now. Because actually, you could go down a different route with him. You could say lots of people don't know what they want to do after school. It's actually healthy, normal not to know. But it is also really important to be curious. You don't have to know, but you do need to be curious. So would he benefit from a PLC year? I think PLC courses are amazing. And I think if you look at your local adult education centre, further education centre, they have amazing courses, brilliant tutors that can really get a kid back engaged after school into additional learning, really help them go, God, that's the thing I'm interested in. I would look down that route with him. Or he works for a year. A year. But let him know you don't have to go to college with these points or whatever it is this year. But you do get this exam under your belt, then take a year to decide. But don't feel compelled to fill out a CAO form because you don't know what to do. There are other routes. And I think we just, as a society, need to get better at
100%,
you know, acknowledging other routes, that there isn't just this one way of moving through primary to secondary to university and then what, you know, but actually taking your time. And I'm, as I said, I've worked with a lot of young people who've massively benefited from PLCs.
Yeah. Or even, as you say,
working a bit
of the real world for a year.
100%.
Because... I don't know. I think there's an argument for even making it mandatory where you can't go straight from secondary school to university, that there has to be a gap where you can think about it, where you can, because say if you get a lot of points, then you get pressure to go and do medicine or something that you mightn't want to do at all.
It should be something that you have a passion and an interest in. And I know there's probably parents going, Joanna, absolutely not. They can't be studying whatever it is. And then there's no job at the end of it. Actually, the world has changed and it's really different, you know, and guidance counsellors are fantastic and, you know, come at this in lots of creative ways. That wasn't my experience at school. I do want to say, if you weren't going down a kind of law, medicine, UCD, Trinity route, there really was, good luck to you. Let us know how that works out. So I do think, you know, talk to the guidance counsellor, keep him talking to the career guidance counsellor in school. That's amazing. And that can't hurt. But you want to take some pressure off this and just say, fine, do you know what? If you don't know what to do, it's okay not to know. There are other things you can do while you're working that out, but just focus on getting the exam done so that you're happy with it. And again, there are so many ways. We all know this. There's a lot of pressure on kids that it's all down to this one exam. And I could speak both sides of that, Sean, because I think it's easy for us who've come through it to say, oh, there's more to life than the Leaving Cert. But when you're in school, it is all about this.
Yes.
And I don't know how helpful it is for the rest of us to come out on Leaving Cert results day and go, this is how I did it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
When you're in it, you're in it. Mm. But, you know, as his parent, you know he has other choices and options. Get really informed in the other choices and options. Take the pressure off this.
I'm hoping you could give me some advice. I recently confiscated my 15-year-old daughter's phone as a result of her bad behaviour lately. I'm not proud to say it, that while in possession of the phone, I looked through it. I have two other children, 20 and 17, and I never had to do this with them. But my daughter has been acting out, and I wanted to see if there was any indication on the phone of why. I was shocked to find explicit images and text messages sent to several of her male peers. I don't think she realised the risks involved in sending things online, and it worries me. Anything could happen with these images and she would be identifiable as her face is on them. I'm really upset, but don't know how to approach this situation. I don't want to shame her sexuality, but I also don't want her to suffer as a consequence of it.
Oh, now you're not going to be able to play this every which way. You're going to have to come at this. There's a few things in this, Sean, like something is going on with this girl. Okay,
yes.
Because you're talking about a pattern of bad behavior, that things have changed. She's been acting out. You weren't sure what was going on. It compelled you to look at the phone. You'd confiscated, maybe if you're honest, you confiscated the phone with a view to looking at the phone to find out what's going on. But in the midst of that, there is either you attempted to talk to her and got nothing back, or you didn't talk to her to see what was going on. But something is going on. So these sexual images, these explicit images, are certainly a big part of the issue. But I'm immediately curious as to what's driving those, what's going on with this kid. And you have to get to the bottom of that as well. I think as a parent approaching this, you have to stay, or perhaps it's better to say get, as calm as you possibly can.
Yeah.
Because you're not calm when you see this.
Yeah.
Nothing
of course
is
not.
Preparing you for this. You have to sit with her and you have to have an open and direct conversation because this is serious. This is actually really serious. And it may be, it's definitely more serious than she thinks it is. And it might be more serious than the parents think it is because she's a minor.
Yes.
And she is producing and sharing sexually explicit content of herself, but she's sharing it with same age male peers. Plural. So she's distributing that image.
Yeah.
And then if they share it on and so forth and all of that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the way it works, and nobody's trying to, you know, criminalize teenagers on any of this, but it is to reinforce the seriousness of this, that self-produced explicit images that are exchanged by adolescents, and we know this happens, okay, they could be legally viewed as pornographic material that's being circulated. So you do want to be very clued into that and have a conversation with her. Now, when you approach with her, it's not kind of fire and brimstone, sit down there to like terrify you, because that's a door slammer.
Yeah,
she's going to roll her eyes, whatever else is going on, it's going to stop the conversation. You want to keep it open and come at this with, these are the reasons I'm really worried about what I saw. And I have to ask you, were you pressured to send those images? Did you choose to send them? Was anyone else involved in those photos being taken? That you've got to get more information from her, but you have to approach that in as calm a state of mind you can. Because even if she doesn't want to talk about it, you have to have the conversation with her. So you look at, there's two ways. Certainly have her delete the images, okay? Delete them off the phone and any backup to any cloud device or whatever the phone is connected to. Talk to her about the peers. You actually obviously know their identities, okay? So it's no point pretending we don't. In one way, you could contact the parents of those peers, let them know this image has been shared with their sons, and ask them to ensure the image is also deleted from those devices and any associated cloud backups with those devices, and that you're letting these parents know, because they may also want to have a conversation with their kids about this, because they're all 15.
Yeah.
They're all very young, actually. And then you do have to speak to her about the legal ramifications about it. I do think, though, getting curious about why she did it is really important, letting her know she's not alone with this, that you're not judging her. But you want to better understand what's going on so that you can support her and help her, but that you are worried.
Yes.
And it's your job as a parent to worry about her. Look, in general, Sean, like most teen sexting is what we'd call a normal part of exploration and development. not great, not nice. It's always on the legal line. Mm. I'm talking about sexting, not just sending explicit images. But it's not usually a cause for huge concern. However, sharing the images ramps that up a bit.
Yes, it does. Yeah.
And it ramps it up quite a bit. Now, there's another reason in this letter, though. You're saying you're not proud to say it, but you were in possession of the phone and you looked through it. There's a bit of a confessional quality to that sentence. There must have been a reason that you looked through the phone. And so beyond these images, why are you not trusting her? And again, there may be good cause and reason for that, but be honest about it. Issues of trust in this relationship also need to be explored. So see how you go with having a conversation with her. I imagine it won't be one conversation, one off. I think you will have to have a bigger conversation about her around boundaries, about consent, about being informed and digitally literate about what she's doing, the consequences, and how she's implicating other young people in what she's doing as well by virtue of sending the image and keeping herself safe. You know, she's identifiable in those images. If you discover that this is bigger than her and a couple of kids in her class, you may need to seek some legal advice, talk to the guards. That may be advisable to do, especially if she ever felt pressured to send those images and really get to the bottom of that. But it might be that the two of you would benefit from talking to a neutral other, you know, a mental health professional that could help you get to the bottom of what's going on in your relationship beyond this. I'd go back to, you know, my daughter has been acting out and I wanted to see what was going on. Something's going on.
There's
with
an
her.
Ongoing thing going on.
Yes, something is going
on
underneath this.
Yeah. Wow. On the other end of the scale, I have a 5-year-old who won't stop picking his nose. Maybe this is a normal curiosity, but surely by now he knows what's up there. The worst part is he continues to eat it when I ask him to stop. I can assure you he's not hungry. How can we break this habit?
'Tis the season of the nose pickers.
Yes,
like
indeed.
this is it. Yeah. Seasonal changes bring colds, they bring blocked noses, and they bring nose pickers, and or a return to a habit or the beginning of a habit, because it's usually a curiosity or something is uncomfortable,
and you go,
oh, that feels better, and that's how it starts. Look, you could do the whole boundary piece and say it's rude to do that in front of people. It's not a polite thing to do. At five, I'm not sure how much.
Yeah,
he's going to care about that, but you could certainly say it. You could also come at it with the, you know, I'm worried that you're putting dirt on your finger up your nose and you could get an infection up there. So we've got to keep our hands clean. Don't be picking or at your nose without washing hands before and straight away afterwards. That makes it a cumbersome habit, you know.
Yeah.
Got to keep going washing my hands just to pick my nose. You're stopping him in the moment because it is quite a mindless thing that people do. I think, you know, say to him, I'm going to get you a hanky, that if your nose is feeling uncomfortable or blocked, you can clean it with a hanky, blow into it, or ask me to help you with it. And if I see you with your finger, I'm just going to say the word hanky, and I'm going to keep saying it to remind you that hanky is in your pocket. Redirect and distract is the only way to get beyond this. But just pay attention if it has just started. Might he have a little blocked sinus? Might he just have a bit of a seasonal cold going on? That could be a part of it as well.
Yeah, that completely explains a lot of it too. Our daughter has just gone 3 and has an unusual way of soothing herself before she falls asleep. We give her a soother at night, and as she falls asleep, she pulls at her neck in the same place repeatedly. It's become a habit that she obviously finds comforting, but it started to become tender and leave a mark. We can't stop her from doing it, and I'm worried it will get worse as time goes on. Any advice on how to stop this?
This is a habit. It's not, you know, it's not nose picking, but it's another habit. Mm. And this is one associated with soothing. So that can be a harder one to break because it feels nice and comforting. But she's not aware of it. Like you're saying, it's happening at night as she falls asleep. So then what I'm wondering if you could do, a couple of things. You could put a cream or an emollient on that area of the neck to protect it, act as a barrier between her pulling at it, rubbing it and marking the skin, because I am like, she could break the skin.
Yes,
she could get quite a tender area there, will allow it to heal. And I think if you got her a stuffy, like you probably have, she's 3, dozens of the things in the house, but find one that has a kind of like a giraffe, you know, like a neck on it, something that she could grip in her hand and pull at easily. So not all like a bear that's head is sewn onto the body wouldn't do that as well as something that has that obvious neck on it would. And just try to keep putting her hand onto that. So if it's happening as she goes to sleep, just keep checking on her. silently. I know you're like, no, we want her to go to sleep herself. Yeah. And we've got this lovely sleep thing going on. That's great. I would come in, just keep moving her hand, putting it under the duvet or on top of this little giraffe's neck, and keep doing it until she gets to sleep. Behind that, because that's a tricky one to break, other than you being there and holding her hand, or as I said, giving her something to substitute, I'm just wondering if it has recently started. Is she worried or preoccupied about anything? What changes? I'm thinking if she's three, has she started preschool? Has there been an upheaval or a change? And it doesn't mean it's a bad thing, by the way, but just has there been a change in her life that is just causing her, I have to deal with all these new people and new things and new rules, that might be something that's causing a bit of preoccupation that she's carrying into her sleep. So when you are at home with her before bed, try to not have screens in general, by the way, 30, 60 minutes before bed. Replace it with some play together. So the kind of play that ideally elicits authentic, good old belly laughter, you know, that it's going to be fun. And it can sound counterintuitive to run around and play in that way just before bed, but it's releasing held energy or pent up feelings. Just and tension just before she's going to sleep. So if you can come at that in a very sensory and playful way before bed and see, is there anything just underpinning the need to be at herself to self-soothe?
Yeah. I always have a run around before bedtime. It's fantastic. I recommend it. Joanna, thanks
for you. Get the steps in at the end of the day.
Yes. Joanna, thanks a million.
Moncrief. Weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.